From 1971, John Lennon's biggest solo hit, Imagine, advising us to free ourselves from attachments to material possessions. Not bad advice at all. We're talking with Brother Guy Consolmagno and Father Paul Moeller about their new book, Would You Baptize an Extraterrestrial? Big questions, interesting conversation. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines with your questions right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Looks like the phone lines are full already. I want to ask one more question, though, Guy and Paul, while I have you here, because I haven't hosted any shows where we talk about these kind of topics. So I'm taking advantage of the opportunity. You know, there was a parody years ago, parody of Desiderata, I think. It was either Firesign Theater or National Lampoon, where their parody was sort of along the lines of, "You are a fluke of the universe. You have no right to be here." Remember that? Either of you?
I do, yes.
It was funny as hell, and but it goes to a sort of a central question that you'd have to ask about. It's what we all ask, is why we're here and what was the point of this whole thing. And I guess that's really what your work in both of those disciplines gets to the heart of, or hopefully tries to.
It does. And one of the great things to remember is that it's a question that doesn't have an answer. It's a question that, you know, if you want the flip answer, the meaning of life is to figure out what is the meaning of life.
Yeah.
Another parody that we have fun with in our book is the science fiction book, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderfully, wonderfully cynical view of how utterly insignificant humanity is from a scientific point of view. And, yeah, I think it's a great gift from science, is to pose to us just what our place is in the universe, and then I think it's a response of love or of faith to try and find meaning in that.
You must get this a lot, though, that, you know, it seems like the world is becoming more secular, that there's a belief in God, but a lot of it is people just trying to cover their bases in case it turns out to be true.
Yeah, that's, what's that, Pascal's wager. I mean, you don't bet against God, because the if you lose, the price is really, really high.
and of course, the joy is that both the jokes are funny, that at the end of the day, humor somehow does make sense out of things that can't be made sense of. And also that one of the great things about Pascal's wager is it's never convinced anybody at the end of the day, because it is a real cynical way of trying to game the system. And God's smarter than us, and he can tell when you're gaming the system.
Yeah, I think God absolutely refuses to be used as a tool to accomplish something else, and that's how Pascal's wager is treating God.
We're going to go to the phones. I'll just warn you, it's sort of like the confession booth. You never know what you're going to get here, so so we'll just roll with it. We're going to try the wild card line. Frank in Wisconsin. Good morning, Frank. You're on with Guy and Paul.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I read a book, and I wish I still had it. I've lost it after moving 6 or 7 times. The author of the book was D for David, Raymond Capt, C-A-P-T. He used the Pyramid of Giza as a time machine or timeline to discover the different dates, and a lot of them checked out. One of them was the birth of Jesus, which came out to be September 29th, 2 BC. I find that very interesting.
Yeah, I've got a friend whose birthday that is. I think she'll be thrilled.
So I'd like to hear your comments on that, please.
I'm always amused at people who have wonderful systems that explain everything, because they never do. But what it really talks about is the way that human beings want to find order in the universe. One of the big dangers in science is that you never know, are we finding a law of nature, or are we just finding a string of coincidences? Am I seeing a pattern, or am I just seeing a face in the clouds? There are all sorts of scientific laws that at this point we don't believe anymore, like Bode's law for the positions of the planets. You know, it looks like a nice orderly pattern until one of them doesn't work, and then you go, well, was that the exception, or maybe the law really is useless? That's why you never are satisfied with the answer you've got. You're always going back and checking your assumptions.
You mentioned that in connection. Thank you, Frank, for the call. You mentioned it in connection with Pluto, I think, in the book, about just a couple of coincidences that misled people for a long time.
Yeah. And yet, one of the other lines is that a really, really long, sufficiently long string of coincidences is the scientific law.
Linda is Stafford, Virginia. Good morning, Linda. You're on with Guy and Paul.
Hi, good morning. Great show. I just want to preface what I'm going to say. You know, I'm not trying to offend anybody at all. But I too am trained as in science. I'm a psychologist. And I've spent a lifetime trying to reconcile my scientific studies with your spirituality and my religion. The only way I have been able to bring those together is to see the Bible as, and please, I'm not trying to offend you, but as a literal experience of extraterrestrials. I feel like when I read the Bible, I see little g God. You know, there were creators, but I don't think it was the big G God. I think there were creators. I think they were extraterrestrial, and I think they were interpreted as gods. I think they probably did create us, but I don't think they are the big capital G God that we truly don't understand. And I mean, I just, all throughout the Bible, even in religious works of art, the Annunciation with Saint Immedius, by Carlo Crivelli, 1486. It has what appears to be, you know, some sort of object in the sky, we'll just say that, with a beam coming directly to Mary's head. Virgin birth. You know, we now know that that can happen. It's called artificial insemination. And, you know, the star leading the three wise men. A star, you know, the bright object in the sky. That's the only way I've been able to reconcile these things and be comfortable and actually go back to church. And I was just curious, what your opinions of that was, what you thought about those things.
Guy, I'll jump in quickly here, and you can follow up if you like. First of all, I'm grateful that you found a way to reconcile it and then be back in church. I think that's a good context in which other good things will happen. I'd say for me, your way of talking about the Bible makes it into in the category of what I would be treating as a kind of scientific explanation. And for me, the Bible is more in the category of family stories. I mean, in my family, we tell lots of stories about events that happened in the past, and those stories get inflated and get exaggerated and become wondrous. And we take those stories to be true at some level because they tell us who we are. But it doesn't matter to us that those stories happen just that way. So they're the foundational stories of our family. You know, that time Uncle Charlie did that crazy thing at table. But they're not a scientific story of the origin of our family. And so, my guy, maybe you and her take on that. But I want to hold back, at least me personally, from trying to find that kind of scientific explanation, narrow scientific explanation in the Bible.
One of the real important things to me, the way that when I read the Bible or when I look at science, is to not only suspend my disbelief, but also to suspend my belief, by which I mean I don't insist on having an answer now. I don't insist that my way of thinking, I don't try to put the things that are mysterious immediately into categories that I can say, oh, it must be this, it must be that. It's a wonderful temptation to do because we want to make sense of the world. But the world is bigger than that, and the universe is bigger than that. So it's a great place to start, but you don't stay at the starting point. You move on beyond there.
Thank you, Linda, for the call. Yeah, you make the point in a couple of really interesting ways in the book, is that what's the hurry? You don't have to have all the answers immediately right now. It's I would think that maybe the journey is the reason, the journey is not only half the fun, but it's maybe part of the reason that striving is what the whole point is.
It's a nice image that was actually promoted by Pope John Paul II of saying, look, we've got two books we're reading, the book of Scripture and the book of nature. And you read these books in different ways, and they tell you different sorts of things. And if it seems to us those two books disagree with each other, it means we're not reading them correctly yet. We're not interpreting correctly yet, because at least in the eyes of faith, both those books are written by the same author, God. So they can't disagree with each other in the end. But in the meantime, since we don't understand them perfectly, let's be patient.
We're going to go to our first-time caller line, Bruce in North Carolina. Good morning, Bruce. You're on with Guy
and
Paul.
Good morning, gentlemen. And Merry Christmas to all, you all.
Thank you.
I believe in God, and I'm a Catholic, and I read the Bible daily. And I wonder if you gentlemen could just help me on one part. I really follow the Bible. I really believe it all. But the one part I always have trouble with is when God says, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness." And that always, you know, made me wonder, like, who's the other people that God's talking about? Who's our? I'd just like your opinion. Thank you.
Thanks,
yeah,
Bruce.
It's the issue of human language trying to express what God is doing. And it's certainly been the tradition that kings would always refer to themselves in the plural. So that the famous line of Queen Victoria, when somebody made a joke in her presence and she replied, "We are not amused." It's merely a way of saying that the God who's speaking is a little bit bigger than the rest of us. And I don't think we have any problem with that.
We'll try David in Anchorage, west of the Rockies. David, up there in Alaska, how's it going?
Hi, yeah, I'd love to be in a real dialogue with you guys for a long time, but I'll limit it to what I think is a question that I've had for a long time, and hope you guys can help me out with it. And that's it's actually a scientific question. I am a Christian, and I am very heavily involved in sciences, too, let's just say that. But it has to do with the redshift. Now, when you it's kind of a complicated question. The zero-point field we know exists everywhere in the universe. It's a energetic field that is an intrinsic property of space itself. And when you have a photon that's traveling through space for 14 billion some odd years, more or less, and through this highly energetic medium, and it doesn't exchange any energy with this medium, this energy packet in an energy field doesn't exchange any energy for 14 billion years, which would affect the redshift of the particle. If it did, and how do we know this? And if we do know this, then the science is true. And if we don't know this, then the science of measuring the distances and the acceleration of things away from us in the universe is baloney. And I don't know. As far as I know, that question is unanswerable. There's more than one thing that causes redshift besides speed, but that's one of them that I've never heard answered. Could you please help me with that?
This is way outside my field of expertise. There are guys in our group who are cosmologists. I'm not one of them. But I'll give a little bit of a shot at it, simply from a scientist, that when you say, all right, if we're ignoring one issue, then the science is baloney, the science is incomplete. And we always know the science is incomplete. Most of the popular descriptions of the Big Bang, of the meaning of the expansion of the universe, turn out to be a whole lot more nuanced when you talk to the guys who are doing it on a regular basis and really deeping themselves into the mathematics. We had a fellow here at the observatory, sadly died of cancer this year, Bill Stager, who was a real expert in this, did his studies with Martin Rees, was a classmate of Stephen Hawking. And he made the point that the mathematics we use to try to describe the Big Bang assumes a spherically symmetric universe, because that's the only kind of math we can handle. But the one thing we know about the universe is that it's not that symmetric. It's got lumps in it. That's why there's you and me rather than just, you know, a field of energy everywhere. So
another thing, I'm sorry, Guy.
Yeah, go ahead.
Another thing I would add is the redshift is not the only way that we use to measure distances. It's the way we use for the longest distances, but there's other ways of measuring distances of objects that are closer, and it's difficult to confirm any one of those methods in isolation that it works perfectly. But if you see two or three or four different methods giving the same answer for the distance of something, it provides a kind of mutual confirmation. So we could be fooled. It could be that they're all wrong, but that's how science goes forward. When it's looking at things really far away, it says, look, we've got three, four, five different methods of measuring distances, and they're all agreeing on this one object. So we're going to take the leap the inductive leap that these methods work within certain limits further off. Now, Guy, you're the scientist. Tell me if that's wrong, but I think that's
right. That's exactly right. You know, that's the philosophy behind it, which is what you guys do. The answer is, of course, that the science doesn't have an answer, that there are still people working on it because we know there's all sorts of holes in the argument. And it'll always be that way. That's why it's fun to do.
Here's the one that messes me up in that same general arena: entanglement, the spooky action at a distance, and the observer effect. This idea that just by observing something, you're affecting it and changing it. That I have a really hard time wrapping my head around that one.
Yeah, because you know it's hard enough to go from our common sense view of the universe to learn freshman physics in college, Newtonian physics, and I've tried teaching Newtonian physics. Believe me, it's hard to get there. And after you've struggled for 3 or 4 years in college and you finally have figured it out and you've got this new common sense, then they teach you quantum, which says, guess what? All of that was incomplete. And the world is even stranger than you thought.
Well, once you get at that level, that observer effect, it almost gets spiritual. That seems to be someplace where the spiritual and the scientific meet, because that's really strange.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry.
I'll tell you what, we'll try to get one more call in here. I don't think we're going to have time, but we'll start it. There's a guy named Jeff in Culver City who calls us a lot. Jeff, you always ask good questions. What's on your mind?
Hi, George, Mr. Guy and Paul. Yes, I've always been skeptical about this newfound blending of religious and extraterrestrial existence. You know, it seems to me that there's a religious vacuum in the 21st century, and everyone is jockeying for position, trying to keep the original game alive while co-mingling the scientific and extraterrestrial at the same time. Pope Francis apparently has found a niche with all of this and is at the forefront in welcoming ETs into the Catholic Church. But my question is this: since no other religion is immediately seeking to jump on the extraterrestrial bandwagon and incorporate alien life forms into their religions, do you think that the Pope will seek to mobilize alien forces and alien beings against the other religions so that the Catholic Church will once again become the dominant religious force in the world? And I'll take your answer off there.
First of all, Catholicism is very well founded. The Pope didn't say that. That was wildly misquoted. He was trying to make a point about how the Jews in the early church felt about Gentiles, and he said that would be as crazy as us talking to ETs today. And, of course, some newspapers went crazy with it. He never was actually talking about real ETs. He was using it as a metaphor.
Thanks for that answer. And I guess, if ETs brought shekels and, toss in the collection plate, they'd be welcome, wouldn't they? All right. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more of your questions for Guy and Paul right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Norman Greenbaum, take us into the break. So the message in this song is, the devil is not your friend. The song is called Down to the River. It's the first single from a guy named Doug Seegers, who my guy Nathan tells me was a homeless fellow living on the streets of Nashville when he was discovered, and now he has a record deal. I'll bet there's probably a lot of singer-songwriters on the streets of Nashville. We're talking with the brother Guy and Paul, Father Paul, about their book, Would You Baptize an Extraterrestrial? Get to as many of your phone calls as we can right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Well, the phones have been pretty full tonight with questions for Brother Guy and Father Paul. We're going to go right back to them. Jason in L.A., been holding a while. Hi, Jason.
Hi. Hey, George. How are you?
Okay. What's on your mind?
Good. I wanted to wish everyone a happy new year. And I think we see the same line of tiptoe progress coming out of NASA and SETI and the Vatican and university courses on astronomy and astrobiology. The same line we find out there, it's sort of like when we find life out there on our terms. And I think most of the Coast audience has a scientific understanding that ET is already here and has been here for a long time. So I wanted to ask our guests if they're familiar with the works of Dr. Johnny Mack, Donald Kehoe, Dr. David Jacobs, Roger Lear, and Ted Phillips of the Center for Physical Trace Research, and Bob Dean, and men like that. I think most of the Coast audience can see through this tiptoe game at this point. And so I was wondering, how do we address this profound disconnect and come together as we move forward? And I wanted to wish everyone a happy new year, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. Guy or Paul, have either of you looked at any of the alien abduction stuff, Dr. Mack of Harvard?
I won't claim that I've looked at it deeply. As you say about the UFO reports, 95% of them are junk, and 95% of the literature is junk, but that doesn't mean that it's 100%. There are things we don't know. To immediately assign them to things we think we do know is, to my mind, a mistake. I work in the field of meteorites. I work with rocks that have fallen from the sky. And there is a long history of people being skeptical about, are these rocks really from space? Are people just delusional? I've got them in my lab. I can, you know, show you scientific evidence that convinces me they've been exposed to cosmic rays, that they have chemistries and isotopes different from Earth rocks. But the reason I can do that is I've got them in my lab. I can do repeatable experiments on them. We haven't been able to do that with any of the UFO claims in terms of being other intelligences. And the people I know who are the best equipped to tell you what's in the sky, who are not the professional astronomers, but the amateur astronomers, the guys who are actually out there with their own telescopes night after night, they're the most skeptical because they've gotten to be so familiar with the sky that they know what they know and they know what they don't know. My answer is that the field has been so poisoned with charlatans that I just don't have the time to paw through it anymore.
Well, I would respond on behalf of the caller in that, Guy, I think you have an open mind about a lot of things, but like you said, you don't have the time. I think there are a lot of people, scientists like yourself, who might have a passing interest in it, but who they've heard that 95% of it is baloney, and they don't look at the other 5%. It sounds to me like you haven't done a whole lot of reading in this area, which, and I can understand you got other stuff to do, but there is some pretty interesting data. We don't have time to do a whole tutorial here tonight, but I'll send you some stuff at some point. It's at least worth looking at. Dr. Mack of Harvard, for example, was somebody who got into this field by accident. Was a brilliant guy who... It led him down a path that he never expected to take, but we'll have that conversation another time. Thanks for the call, Jason. First-time caller, Mark in Fairfax, Virginia. Good morning, Mark. You're on with Guy and Paul.
Hello, gentlemen. It's an honor to speak to such three wise men so close to the coming of our king. So thank you so much. My question is about hearing your thoughts on the spirit world, where it surrounds us. We're told it's there. God created it. We're also told that we look at the world through a glass darkly. So do you believe it's a physical existence that we just don't have the senses to perceive? Or is it a completely otherworldly, other dimension? Because I've had, you know, extremely poignant encounters with the spirit world. And my questions are, what do you think about when those ideas come to you? What comes to mind?
I mean, I certainly think it's the case that there are things that are beyond our senses. That doesn't mean they're spiritual. It just means our senses are limited. So that's, to me, a separate question from the spirit world. I mean, if I'm talking about a spirit world, is I want to take it out of the realm of something physics can explain. I want to put it in the realm of human relationships, of love. If someone asks you to prove scientifically that your wife loves you, well, you can't, but you still believe it's true, and you experience that love in a way that science can't even talk about. So I don't know what to say beyond that about a spirit world existing. I mean, it's the world of the human spirit. Guy, do you have a
It's really tricky to talk about because human language slips into categories that you don't intend to put it in. To give you another example of a long, does your wife love you? you can look at the painting, the Mona Lisa, and analyze all of the inks and all of the pigments, and that doesn't tell you anything about what the painting, the Mona Lisa, is all about and what it's meant in human history. The reality of what the Mona Lisa is nothing that can be weighed or measured, but it's certainly real. One of the great things for me when I became a Jesuit and learned Jesuit spirituality was to recognize that there is a rich language to describe the things that everybody has experienced. And we in our spirituality, we talk about the evil spirit and the temptations of the evil spirit. Now, do I think this is Casper the Friendly Ghost or, you know, his evil twin? That might be a way I can picture it, but just as I know that a particle is not really like a tiny bit of dust in the scientific sense, or that an electron is not really a small silver ball that has a negative sign painted on the side, it's the limit of my human imagination to deal with something that is in many ways beyond what I can grasp, but is certainly real.
Science tends to function by reductionistically, by dealing with things, you know, reducing them to the lowest common terms, atomistically. Things of the spirit are holistic. They're things that science can't grapple with that way. And as Guy says, for example, the language of an evil spirit, well, that's a way of talking about the human tendency to screw things up that we have in common that science can't describe. Do I think that there is a reality beyond that? Well, I believe in God. I believe that God founds that reality. But I don't necessarily believe that there's layers and layers of strange beings between us and God that are have different, I don't know, different levels of reality somehow.
Right, because what that tries to do is it tries to turn them back into our physical reality that could then be measured with a meter or a yardstick. And that's exactly what it isn't.
Want to try Sal in Oregon on the wild card line? Good morning, Sal.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure.
I'd like to use talk radio as an outlet, and I have a question for Father Paul and Brother Guy. What is your opinion on other beliefs, especially Scientology?
I don't know that much about Scientology to begin with. As far as other beliefs, I think any religious belief is a human attempt to grapple with our history and that which is transcendent in our history. I think Christianity is a well-established and traditional way of grappling with the transcendent in our history. Scientology, I don't know the details of it, but I would take any religion to be a human attempt to grapple with the transcendent. Guy, do you have a different take? Or?
Yeah, three things that I'll throw out. First of all, that's also true of our religion. That's the true of my religion. I'm a Catholic in part because I believe it's the most complete and coherent way of dealing with it, but I've got plenty of friends who believe in other religions, and I see that they do great things in their lives, and I certainly respect and can learn from them. The important thing is the old Jewish folktale, you don't love the Torah more than God. Some people want to worship their religion instead of worshiping the God that the religion is supposed to be pointing them at. That's a great danger. A second thing is a wonderful thing that a theologian reminded me. Every heresy is based on an important truth. And what she was trying to tell me is that just because something is true doesn't mean it's the complete truth. And if you hold on to one bit of truth and close your eyes to the other side of it, you wind up sometimes being misled by truth, which denies the fact that there's truth there. That's why we've got big, complicated religions. That's why we admit that we make mistakes at times and have to correct ourselves.
Thanks, Sal. Interesting question. On the international line, Nick in Toronto. Hi, Nick.
Thank you for taking my call. I just have two comments. The first one, Spanish philosopher, Averroes, Islamic Spanish philosopher, said there's two ways to understand God. One, through revelation, through reading the Quran or Bible. Second, through studying nature. My second comment was, last year I took an elective class of religions, and I was writing a paper between Islam and Christianity. And what I concluded was that the Star of Bethlehem and the Black Stone from Mecca were both celestial events. And Gabriel, the angel Gabriel, foreshadowed the birth of Jesus and dictated the Quran to Muhammad, and I was just wondering, have you looked into the Kabbalah, the black stone at Mecca? Because some say that it was a meteorite that came down, and I was just wondering what your thoughts are on that. And I'll take my answer off there. Thank you very much. God bless.
Okay, thanks. Paul, you do Everos because you know the philosophy better than I do.
And you're the meteorite guy. I will pick up on the line about there being two sources of revelation. I mean, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, there's revelation that comes through Scripture. Some would see that as God dictating. I think in a Catholic perspective, we tend to see it as kind of the collective inspired wisdom of the Christian community. And then there's also God is revealed through the order and beauty of nature. And I think we know of God through both those sources. And amen to that. But as for, I don't know anything about, and I'm not prepared to comment on the meteorite aspect of that. Guy, did you, I don't know if you had a...
I've heard a lot of theories about it. I mean, the interesting thing is, the stone's there. People can go and see it. This is not some mythical story of something that happened some other time. And the stone could be totally natural. The one theory I've heard is that it was not the meteorite itself, but it's a bit of desert glass that was formed by the impact of a meteorite. That could be. The bigger message is not what was the Star of Bethlehem, what is the physical stone, but rather what can we learn about our relationship to God in the face of this bit of nature, the fact that the universe is more complicated than we thought, the fact that you can go outside at night, look at the stars, and be reminded that there's more to life than what's for lunch.
Try to go to Sharon in New Jersey on the wild card line. Good morning, Sharon. You're on with Guy and Paul.
Oh, thank you. I love your show. I listen to it constantly. You were asking because I believe in science and I'm very religious and I always had trouble with with the Big Bang theory and everything, and I always wondered how do you incorporate the two? So I always wondered, like in the Bible, this. So much that's left out. So I'm wondering, like all the technical details are left out, like exactly how he created the earth, and he doesn't define how long a day is. He doesn't say how vast or what exactly is the heavens and the earth. So why couldn't God create like the whole universe by using the Big Bang theory? I mean, I told that to my son, and that made him very happy, and he's accepted that, and he's 30 now. So is that possible?
And I think the Big Bang Theory, if it's true, is part of how the universe that God made functions. And in that sense, God is using it, just like you could say God is making use of the law, Newton's laws and other scientific laws. So to me, the traditional philosophical distinction between primary and secondary causality. God is the primary cause, the ground of being, the ground of order, and then God sustains that order. The unfolding of the natural laws is sustained by God, and so I don't see a conflict or a problem there. The fact that the details are not spelled out in the Bible, I don't think the Bible is meant as a technical manual for the creation of the universe. It's meant as a statement of God's love and care for us.
Yeah, I think Sharon's got onto a real wonderful insight there. This is the kind of thing that made Thomas Aquinas famous, to be able to show the difference in that sense. And to echo what Paul just said, the fact that all of those details are left out of the Bible tells you that that's not what the author of the Bible is interested in talking about. And Shakespeare wrote a play called Macbeth, and at the beginning, the witches are brewing a brew. Now, if you took that brew and said, aha, that was really supposed to be a recipe book, and this is how you make a witch's brew, you're missing the whole point of the play Shakespeare wrote.
It sort of reminded me, I said something about it earlier, I don't know if you heard it, but it's like that play in Inherit the Wind, the Clarence Darrow guy talking to the William Jennings Bryan guy and quizzing him about the specifics of the Bible, and the Jennings Bryan guy is sticking to specific details when obviously that's not what the Bible says. So, yeah, good point. Try to get one more call in. Chico in Oklahoma City. Hi, Chico. You're on with Guy and Paul.
Thank you so much for allowing me to be on the program today. Father Paul, Brother Guy, it is an honor to be on the line with you today. And, George, you're an amazing host. Always good to hear you on the air.
Thanks.
Yes, sir. I just want to say that I do believe in God, and please forgive me. At times, I can be a bit scatterbrained, so I'm going to do my best to get my point across and ask the question that I intend to. You know, I hear people often mention how big the universe really is, how big space really is. And often along with that conversation, I hear people say things like, well, man, you know, universe is so big, space is so big, how insignificant must we be? We're just on this little dot in this vast space, this vast universe. And I just want to point out that I feel that it doesn't prove our insignificance. I feel that it actually proves the opposite. I feel it proves that just how significant we really are, because although there may be a lot of different theories out there, as far as I know, there is no proof that any eye, any telescope, or any satellite has been able to see anything close to what we are as humans. And I think instead of maybe creating stories of little green men or these, you know, ancient alien theories, that we should take a look at each other and realize just how unique we are, how special that we are, created in God's image. And then instead of oppose each other, we should embrace each other. And even though, you know, I as a Christian, I do my best to be the best Christian I can be, although I fail. I fail more than I succeed, even though
I... Hey, Chico, I'm going to have to cut you off for a second because we're going to give these guys a chance to respond to your very excellent points. But we're almost out of time for the show. So, Guy and Paul, go ahead and take a whack at that one.
I just want to say that whatever book Chico writes, I want to read it. I love his attitude.
Absolutely. I'm thinking, you know, he's going to write a great book himself. That's beautiful.
It's kind of consistent with what you hear from astronauts who, when they see Earth from space, they think, wow, we are pretty special. We got to take care of this place.
Yeah.
You realize the place in the program. The preciousness of our little island in space here, it's a unique and wonderful and beautiful place, and we're privileged to have it, but it's in a very huge universe, and that's daunting and amazing.
Brother Guy Consolmagno, Father Paul Mohler, thank you both very much for being here. I love the book, Would You Baptize an Extraterrestrial? I recommend it. And I'll tell you, fellas, if you're ever in Las Vegas, look me up, because we've got a lot of souls here that could probably use a spiritual tune-up.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Best of luck with the book. Thank you. Thanks also to Nathan Staten, Tricia Pepe, Dan Galante, our webmaster Lex Lonehood, producer Chris Boros. I'll be back next Sunday with sort of an end-of-the-year extravaganza palooza, the biggest coast-type stories of the year. Good night, everyone.